Hello and welcome to the Tuesday, October 27th, 2015 edition of the Sands and Storms and Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Typo squatting sadly isn't going away. Now, many of these typo squatting websites essentially just register the .com version of a popular .org or another top-level domain. In one case that a reader brought to our attention, a veteran charity, amvets.org. Now, in this case, and I've seen this a lot lately with typo squatting domains, the domain is not just offering some sort of innocent ads and links to related sites, but instead is also going the scarier route, where when you visit the website, you'll be offered some suspect antivirus alerts, and then you will be asked to call the usual 800 number. Investigating these domains is so far complicated in that these particular bad ads only show up once in a while. So if you complain to a hosting company or so about these particular malicious ads, then they may not actually see them when they go ahead and investigate the site. In this case, there are at least 10,000 different domains that are linking to this one IP address that also hosts this amvets.com domain. And if you're living outside the US, you probably for a while now use credit cards with a chip embedded and you need to enter a PIN whenever you use the card. Now, this year, the US credit card industry started rolling out similar cards that instead of a PIN require a signature in order to authenticate the user. A few years back, there were some attacks that were demonstrated in how this process can be manipulated. However, so far, these attacks haven't really been considered sort of feasible to be done in the wild, because essentially what it requires is a man in the middle on the card itself. Now, a little bit about how these cards work with the PIN code. When you insert a card in a terminal, the terminal is verified as being authentic, and then the terminal is asking the card whether or not a valid PIN was entered. At that point, the user is prompted for the PIN. The user enters the PIN, and then the card essentially does not report the PIN back to the terminal. That's actually done as a security measure in order to keep the PIN confidential. Instead, the card just reports whether or not the PIN was correct. What happened now is that criminals did steal credit cards with a chip. They then cut out the chip from the card and inserted it into another stolen card, but not before layering it with a second manipulated chip on top of it. So really what you have here is two chips on top of it embedded in a card. So from the outside, it looks like a normal card. It still fits into the normal reader slot and otherwise really just functions like any chip and PIN card would. But what happens now is that the owner of the card no longer has to know the real PIN for the card, because essentially this special chip that was added in the middle will manipulate the data coming from the terminal. Instead of the terminal now requesting a PIN, well, that will still happen, but the man in the middle card will respond to that request with the OK code, and it will then forward the request to the original chip, but only requesting a signature verification, which of course will not prompt the user for the PIN and unlock the card even for use without the PIN. This particular feature was implemented to sort of support legacy terminals that do not support chip and PIN. And actually, this feature is going to help a lot of US users of these cards, because US cards do not have a PIN. They only use a signature for verification. But the end effect is that with this particular and actually really sophisticated attack, it is possible to use stolen chip and PIN cards. And in this particular case that actually happened a couple years ago, but now was documented for the first time, about 600,000 euro were stolen from affected cards. And recently there was a lot of talk about weaknesses in the Diffie-Hellman exchange. The most common configuration here uses 1024-bit keys, and with that it should be possible for a nation state to decrypt any VPN connection that does use this fairly common and so far thought of as secure default configuration. Now, in a paper that was published with this particular release about the common misconfigurations, the authors stated, based on a 1% sample of servers that they scanned, that about 66% of servers out there on the internet are vulnerable to this attack. There's now a new, a little bit more detailed analysis that looks at the method that was used to scan these servers and then to figure out whether or not that's actually representative of what we commonly find in VPN configurations. The problem here was that the researchers that did this scan, essentially they did an internet-wide scan, actually 1% of the internet they scanned, for VPN servers, and then they looked at the initial Diffie-Hellman exchange offer. Now, the problem here is that these researchers, of course, did not have valid credentials and weren't able to complete the full handshake. So while they offered 1024 bits, the VPN responded with it, but the way IPsec works, it may actually not allow you to go through with the authentication if your encryption algorithms are too weak. So while there is no new estimate as how many servers are vulnerable to this particular flaw, it should be assumed that the actual number is quite a bit less than the 66%. Still, if you are running a vulnerable configuration, probably still a good idea to upgrade. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.